Chapter 11. Ancient Africa. Ancient peoples of West Africa. When you first started to learn about ancient times, you heard about the nomads who settled in the Fertile Crescent between the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers. If you were to put your finger on a map right between those two rivers, and then move your finger right, you would cross over the land of the Sumerians and of the Babylonians and the Assyrians. You would cross the top part of India, where Mohenjo-Daro used to be. If you kept on going right, you would end up in China, where Qin and his family grew their crops beside the Yellow River. If you put your finger on the Fertile Crescent and then moved it left, you would come to Egypt and the Nile River, where the pharaohs lived. We know a great deal about the history of Egypt because the Egyptians left thousands and thousands of artifacts, treasures, and everyday objects behind them. Archaeologists dug up the artifacts and used them to learn more about ancient Egypt, and the Egyptians also left us writing on stone tablets. Historians read these tablets and wrote down the history of the ancient Egyptian empire. But if you keep moving your finger on down the Nile River, you will see that Egypt is only one small part of a whole huge continent, a large piece of land with many countries on it. This continent is called Africa. The people of Africa did not leave written records or thousands of artifacts behind them, so we don't know as much about ancient Africa as we do about ancient Egypt. But we do know that people have lived in Africa from the very earliest times. If you were to move your finger left from the Nile River, you would come to a huge sandy desert, the Sahara Desert. Today, the Sahara Desert is as hot and dry as an oven. The ground is cracked and parched. Sand drifts over the iron-hard ground and piles up in huge drifts called dunes. The only water lies in oases, little patches of land where water collects and a few scrubby palm trees can grow. Tiny villages sometimes settle in these oases. The people raise desert animals that don't need much water: sheep, camels, and goats. They eat the dates that grow on the palm trees. Sometimes one tree is owned by several families who share it. Life in the Sahara Desert is difficult and dangerous. But long ago, this part of Africa wasn't a desert. It was a green, fertile place full of water and trees. Rivers and streams used to run where rocky, dried valleys now lie. Grassy meadows once grew, where shifting sands now blow. Herds of gazelles and antelopes roamed through the green plains. Fish, crocodiles, and hippopotami swam in the rivers. Wild cows and sheep lived in the forests. The people of the Sahara were farmers, just like those who lived in the Fertile Crescent. They hunted wild animals and raised their own plants and animals for food. How do we know this? Archaeologists who dug down through the hard dirt of the Sahara Desert found ancient pollen from trees and seeds from grasses and flowers. None of these trees or flowers grow in the Sahara today. They left their seeds long, long ago. The archaeologists also found bones of animals that used to live in the Sahara back when there was enough water for them. In one place, the people who lived in a Saharan village had eaten a feast of turtle. There were hundreds of shells that had been cracked open for their meat. In another place, the villagers had eaten an entire giraffe, except for its head. The ancient people of Africa also left paintings behind them. They drew pictures of their way of life on the stone walls of caves. In these paintings, we see men growing crops and taking care of herds of animals. We see women in beautiful clothes riding tame cows. These pictures tell us about the way the Sahara used to be. But then, something happened in the Sahara. The rains got scarcer and scarcer. Trees began to wither and die. The grass died too, and the ground dried up until it was nothing more than dust and sand. The rivers stopped flowing, and the streams disappeared. The animals went further and further south, down to the parts of Africa where there was still water and food, and the people of the Sahara went south too. They traveled for weeks and weeks. They settled around the lakes and rivers in Central Africa and began a new life. And above them, the Sahara turned into desert. From now on, Africa would be divided by the huge, dangerous desert. Up along the coast of the Mediterranean Sea, people from Mesopotamia and Egypt would settle down and live in the northern part of Africa. And down below the Sahara Desert, the people of Africa would live for centuries in peace, cut off from the rest of the ancient world by the massive sands between them. Anansi and Turtle. The ancient people of Africa didn't leave mummies or clay tablets behind them, but they did leave stories, passed down from person to person. Anansi the spider is a favorite character of African storytellers. Anansi is a tricky spider who often gets his way, but sometimes he is outwitted. Here is a story about Anansi and his friend, Turtle. It comes from the Yoruba people of Nigeria, a West African country that is just south of the Sahara Desert. In this story, Anansi is hungry and he's looking forward to eating a good supper of yams. Yams are a little bit like potatoes, only rough on the outside like a coconut. The people of Africa have grown them in the ground for thousands of years. Anansi the spider was hungry. He had dug some of the fattest yams ever out of his garden and had baked them carefully in his clay oven. Now they were ready to come out. The yams smelled wonderful, and he couldn't wait to dig in. But just as he was sitting down to his meal, along wandered Turtle. Now, Anansi and Turtle were friends, but when Anansi looked at his yams, and then looked at Turtle, he thought, "There are just enough yams for me. If Turtle eats half of them, I'll still be hungry."
"Oh, Anansi," Turtle said, "how wonderful those yams smell. It has taken me all day to crawl over to your house for a visit, and I haven't eaten my lunch or my supper. Please share your yams with me."
Now in Africa, it is the custom to share your meal with any visitor who asks, so Anansi couldn't say no. He said grumpily,
"I would be happy to share my yams with you, Turtle. Have a seat.
Help yourself."
Turtle sat down and reached for the fattest yam, but just as he was about to touch it, Anansi shouted,
"Stop! Are you going to eat with those filthy flippers? Really, Turtle, don't you think you should wash off first?"
Now, Turtle had been crawling all day. He was dirty and sandy and hadn't come across any water. But he looked at his flippers. They certainly were dirty.
"Where should I wash?"
he said.
"Go wash in the river," Anansi said. "It's only half a mile away."
Poor Turtle. He got up and crawled off to the river to wash his flippers. By the time he came back, the yams were half gone. Anansi said, with his mouth full,
"Sorry, Turtle. You were so long that I had to start eating. But go ahead and have some yams."
Turtle reached for the yams, but his flippers had gotten dirty again from his journey back up from the river.
"Turtle," Anansi yelled, "didn't I say that you should wash yourself off? Don't come to the table dirty."
Turtle crawled wearily off to wash himself again. When he climbed slowly back up from the river, he was very careful to stay on the grass. But when he got to the table and reached out his clean flipper for a yam, the last crumbs were gone. Turtle looked sadly at the empty platter.
"Well," he said after a little while, "thank you for inviting me to supper, Anansi. The next time you come by my house, be sure to share my dinner with me."
And he got down and crawled away
still hungry.
A few days later, Anansi was going by Turtle's house on the riverbank. Turtle told me that he would share his food with me, he thought. I'll stop and eat with him. So he bounced up and knocked on Turtle's door. Turtle! Turtle! He cried. I'm ready for supper.
Turtle opened the door and blinked at Anansi.
Supper is all ready, he said. Come along with me. It's right down here.
And with that, he led Anansi to the river's edge.
I've set the table right down there, at the bottom of the water, he said. Dive on down and eat.
And with that, he slipped into the water, swam down to the river's bottom, and started to eat. Anansi ran back and forth on the bank. First he tried jumping into the water, but he was so light that he floated on the top. He tried to swim down. He tried to make himself sink, but nothing worked. Down below, he could see Turtle polishing off all the food.
Finally, Anansi stuffed the pockets of his tiny jacket full of pebbles and jumped back into the water. He sank like a stone, right down to the bottom, where Turtle was eating his way through a whole platter full of delicious food. Turtle pushed the platter over.
Here, he said. Have some. But first, Anansi, take off your jacket. It's so rude to wear a coat at the table.
Anansi took off his jacket, and as soon as it was off his shoulders, he popped right back up to the surface of the water. When he stuck his head underwater, he could just see Turtle finishing off the very last morsel of food.
Thank you for supper, Turtle, he said gloomily. And he swam back to the riverbank, wet and hungry.
Moral: if you try to be too smart, you might find that someone else outsmarts you instead. Anansi and the Make-Believe Food. Another story about Anansi tells us about a time when food was very scarce and the rivers and streams were drying up. It may even come from the days when the people of Africa were leaving the Sahara for greener places. Here is the story. There had been no rain for many, many days. The crops had all withered away. The animals were starving. Anansi and his whole village were hungry too. And day after day, the sun shone down and the blue sky stayed empty of clouds. Finally, Anansi said,
If someone doesn't go find some food, we will all die of hunger. I am going to walk until I find a village where there is food and bring some back for all of us.
So Anansi started out. He walked and he walked and he walked until the sun went down. He walked all night. When the sky began to get light the next morning, he saw smoke from the chimneys of a village far in the distance. He walked until he reached the village, and then he stood with his mouth open. The village was full of cassava. Cassava are vegetable roots that look like large potatoes. Anansi loved roasted cassava, almost as much as he loved yams. And in this village, there were no people, just cassava walking around in the streets, sweeping the steps of their huts, and sitting under the palm trees, talking to each other. When the cassava saw him, they all jumped up.
A visitor! A visitor! They said.
Would you like to eat us roasted, boiled, or fried?
I don't care,
Anansi stammered.
Roasted!
All the cassava cried. They jumped into the fire one by one until they were nicely roasted, and then lined up for Anansi to eat them. He was just getting ready to take a bite out of the first one when he saw another spire of smoke far away.
What is that?
He asked.
Oh, that's just the plantain village,
the cassava said.
Aren't you going to eat us?
Now a plantain is like a banana,
And Anansi liked fried plantain even more than he liked roasted cassava. So even though the cassava begged him to stay and eat them, Anansi jumped up and ran towards the plantain village. It took him hours to get there, and by the time he arrived, he was hot and thirsty, and even hungrier. But all the plantains ran out to meet him. The little baby plantains danced around his feet, and the big plantains jumped up and down for joy.
"Who would you like to eat us?"
they asked.
"Roasted, boiled, or fried?"
"Any way you want," Anansi cried.
"Fried,"
the plantains shouted. So they jumped into a big pot of oil one by one and lined up to be eaten. But just as Anansi was getting ready to sink his teeth into the first one, he saw another spire of smoke far off in the distance.
"What's that?"
he asked.
"Oh, that's just the rice village,"
the plantain said.
"Aren't you going to eat us?"
Now, if there was one thing that Anansi liked even more than a roasted plantain, it was a big bowl of boiled rice. So even though the plantains begged him to stay and eat them, Anansi got up and began to walk towards the rice village. By the time he reached it, the sun was setting. He was so hungry that he grabbed the first little pieces of rice who ran out to meet him and started to eat them raw. But the other rice grains squeaked,
"No, no, we will cook ourselves. How would you like to eat us, roasted, boiled, or fried?"
"Any way you like," Anansi moaned. "Just feed me."
"Boiled,"
the rice shouted. So the rice grains threw themselves into a big pot of boiling water and climbed out into a big bowl. Just as Anansi was getting ready to plunge his hand into the bowl, he saw one more spire of smoke.
"What's that?"
he asked.
"We don't know,"
the rice grains shrilled at him.
"Just eat us."
But Anansi thought,
"Each village has been better than the one before. If I can get to that village, I'll get to eat something even better than rice."
So he left the bowl of rice and ran towards the strange village. It was nighttime when he got there. He ran eagerly into the center of the town and stopped. It was his own village, and there was no food anywhere to be seen. Anansi fainted. When he woke up, the people of his village were all gathered around him.
"Here," they said, "we boiled a fishbone and made you some fishbone and water soup. It's all we have. Where have you been?"
Anansi told them all about the cassava village, the plantain village, and the rice village. But no one could ever find those villages again. What do you think the moral of this story is? Maybe it is, don't be greedy. Eat whatever you're given. Note to parent. The climate changed in the Sahara around 3500 BCE. We know little about the cultures that flourished in southern Africa before medieval times. The second volume of The Story of the World deals much more extensively with African history.